Welcome to CVAR, a COVID vaccine adverse reaction podcast where vaccine injured share resources and hope without censorship. Each brave guest provide insight into their journey. This podcast does not replace any medical or legal advice. Now, let's welcome your host author, Bawn Galt, and her guest.
Welcome to CVAR, a COVID vaccine adverse reactions podcast. I'm your host, Bawn Galt, and today we talk to Bianca Rose Dawson about her adverse reactions after taking the J&J COVID-19 mRNA vaccine and what we can learn from her experience. And with that, Bianca, welcome to CVAR.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for taking the invitation. Now, if you are watching this episode on YouTube, please go to the show description below to click on any of the links there, which will take you to other platforms to see the full interview. If you're watching on another video sharing platform already, or on any of the 65 podcast sites this episode is on, then this whole episode will continue uninterrupted. So for you YouTube viewers, we will see you there. So with that, Bianca, let's get started and get your story out there. So before your life changed after getting the shot, please tell us what your life was like before.
Yeah. So I'm 29 years old. I actually just purchased my own place a little bit before COVID. So I'm enjoying being independent, and I have a job. I work in tax. So I'm pretty busy a lot of the time. There's always lots of deadlines, and I love my job. I just finished my MBA.
Congratulations. What is your MBA on?
It's just in business management for now. I'm just trying to further get up the ladder a little bit in my tax career. I'd like to work in upper management and get to make decisions. So I'm working really hard toward that. And having another graduate degree was really helpful.
So just a normal student. So now let me ask you this, because you just finished your MBA and there was no mandate at your school at the time, was it? Or were they just talking about it?
So my classes were all online to begin with. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really have to worry about it, but I did see a lot of emails coming through my university inbox. It was a great deal that they were talking about mandates and even earlier how people were going to test. So I know there was a lot of conversation about it, but I'm not sure where everything kind of fell out. And I was kind of glad to be able to take online classes.
Right. So yeah, because at the time that when you took the vaccine, it was still kind of early on, that discussion was still kind of developing. So I'm kind of curious about that, if that kind of played into your experience at that time when you're making that decision. Okay, so it was just starting to kind of come into the scene, but it didn't really affect you at the time yet because it wasn't fully shaken out. Okay, so what were some of the physical activities that you were doing while you were doing your MBA program?
Yeah, so I was very active from a young age. My parents had to keep me from climbing all over their furniture. So I got started in gymnastics and horseback riding. And I've done those pretty much my entire life. My gymnastics kind of turned into aerial acrobatics, which I've been doing the last couple of years. And I was still actively taking care of my horse. And I was also working out with a trainer 3 days a week. My physical health was really important to me to keep my mental health there while I was working a lot of hours and in school a long time. So that was it was kind of my way of keeping that balance. So it was really important.
Wow. Well, I want to share my screen. I want to share some of the pictures of some of your active life before. And you carried a full-time job. You also were doing an online MBA program, and then you were also very, very physically active yourself. So let's see what your life was like before. Okay. So we're looking at your Instagram. Okay. So this over here. Okay. Here. All right. So there's your mom and your brother. So your family is very important to you. Do you spend a lot of time with your family?
Yes. They live not too far, about 10 minutes away. It's as far as I could go from my mom and dad. They've been supportive from a very young age of everything that I've wanted to accomplish. And my brother doesn't live too far away either. And I have a great nephew. So we definitely spend a lot of time together.
Yeah. And who is this adorable fudge-faced dog? Are you a pet parent too?
That is my puppy, Winston. Well, I guess he's not a puppy. He's going to be 3 this year. And he keeps me on my toes. He always wants to, he's still in those puppy stages. So he's a lot of fun.
Yeah, he's adorable. And I see some pictures of you in the hospital as well. So yes. What's your mom doing during this hospital?
So it was really hard to move my limbs at this point. So I couldn't really wash my hair or take a shower. So they had these caps, and you could put like dry shampoo and like other things, some oils to kind of make your hair smell a little better. It just makes you feel a little better when you're kind of stuck in bed.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to talk more about your hospital visits and what did they uncover when you started getting your symptoms, but and look at these. Oh, here's another one of your hospital pictures. So
when I first started to share.
When you first started to share, we'll talk about that. So people can understand and learn from what you learned going through this. So this is the acrobatics that you were doing.
Yes.
Yeah. That looks professional. Are you also an acrobatic modeling or?
No, we just did some fun, some photos. The studio owners are also a really great photographer. So we were always doing fun activities.
Yeah. Look at these. Oh my goodness. It would fall down. Woohoo. Oh my God. Yeah, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So you're very active. Oh my goodness. You're making my back hurt. Okay. So yeah, so that's we're going to stop sharing right there. Okay. So yeah, you had a very active life. I don't know where you get the energy for all of that. But normal, fun, healthy, ambitious young woman. So then let's go to when you decided to get your COVID-19 inoculation. So originally you were super excited to get it. What was your reasons for why you were so exuberant to go get this?
Yeah, I mean, I remember kind of like my close group of friends, when the vaccine started coming out, a lot of my friends are nurses or doctors or in that field. And they were having a tough time on the front line, seeing a lot of COVID cases. So it was really exciting when they first announced the vaccine, because I just wanted relief for them. I saw how hard things were. So we were waiting. Oh yeah. Go ahead.
What city, where do you live? So people can understand kind of like where these cases were coming from that you saw?
Yeah. I don't know how specific, but in the
Connecticut area. Okay.
Yeah. So New England we had a lot of cases. So we were excited, and then the rollouts were kind of happening. So in April came and I was eligible. We stayed up that night. It was kind of a fun friends thing. We got the first appointments we could get, and
Who did you make the appointment with?
Well, I made my appointment because we were still kind of virtual. So uh-huh. I made my appointment in my Walgreens.
For local Walgreens. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then.
Okay. So
next morning.
Right. Right. So we, as in you and a couple friends.
Yeah. I think I was the only one that day that could get an appointment, but my friends were pretty much scattered throughout the week.
Right. Okay. So bring us to kind of, so we can understand, like I'm not really going to judge on anybody, but we want to understand the thought process so that we aren't so judgmental on people's thought process and kind of why they made the decisions they did and also what they're experiencing. So help us to understand, where did you get your information about the efficacy and safety of this vaccine before you decided to sign up for it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes, we were really excited, but we did a lot of talking about it. Mm-hmm. A lot of it sounds really bad from somebody that kind of works in a research field, but word of mouth was really the first line of information you got. Mm-hmm. And I really think it started to create some ideas about what was going on. So then you were kind of like, if anything sounded a little off, you would be like, okay, Google, I'm going to just see what pops up, because it was so new. And I definitely was very concerned, but I didn't think I did as much research as I would have looking back.
Well, let me ask you this, because this is a common thing that I've heard. So you're talking word of mouth. Mm-hmm. You obviously got the advertisement from your local drugstore or, you know, Walgreens in that case, just like many others get it from different grocery stores and the advertisements there. You're seeing the promotions to the stores. You're talking to your friends. No one has gotten it yet, so nobody has any information of any kind of adverse reactions or side effects from it because it just got rolled out. So any kind of information outside from the efficacy and safety at the time, you were not privy to because you didn't see that through your families or friends or the Walgreens. Now, you did what normal people did, is you went to the search engines to just do some research. You went to Google. Is Google the only search engine that you went to at the time?
Probably. It's okay. My first one that pops up. So.
Yeah, that's very, very normal. Most people Google it. Mm-hmm. Now, at the time, most people aren't aware, like fast forward now, that Google censors a lot of the information that goes against the safety and efficacy and fully disclose any potential side effects and adverse reactions from any of the COVID-19 vaccines. Google algorithm censors that. But at the time, most people aren't aware of that because they're doing what they normally do when they research anything is let's just Google it. Oh, I guess I'm not seeing anything else besides go get your shot. This is how you can get it. And so I totally understand that. And for people who want to be judgmental of why didn't you do the research, you did your research. You were just being given what the Google authorized algorithm was presenting to you, which is go get the vaccine. It's totally safe. It's effective. And anything else from other countries is not being served on Google.
Yeah. And I really thought that, like, I've always gotten the flu shot. I've always gotten all the vaccines, especially when I travel. I did a good amount of that prior to this. And I never had any reaction. So I really trusted that if they said it was just like getting your flu shot, that I was going to be okay.
Right, right. So that's another thing I want to ask you about is there is the common argument that it's just another vaccine, like all the other vaccines. But the FDA relabeled the definition of vaccines to include the mRNA as gene therapy as a vaccine. Did you get privy to any of that information when you were doing the research at the time?
No, I did not find out about that until recently. Yeah, it's kind of one of those things that like you just feel like you should have trust in the people that are kind of rolling these out. Like, I'm not a scientist. I don't think mm-hmm. I would understand some of those early documents that came out. It seemed mm-hmm. like you got a lot of case studies. And I would read like the summary, but all the like my yeah. background's in tax and numbers. I just didn't know what they were.
That's completely logical. You know, yeah. we have to think in order to understand your experience of from what the decision making that you had before up to here. That's completely logical. You trusted that the FDA, the CDC, NIH, all the public health authorities are giving you full disclosure.
Yeah.
So, and that's completely logical assertion. Now, did the media that you consume for reliable news give you any alternative early treatment options aside from getting vaccinated at the time? And we're talking about in April, not now in September, yeah. in April.
Oh God, no, that was pretty much it.
That was it. It was just yeah. the shot is it. There's nothing else that you could do if you catch COVID-19.
No.
Okay.
Not so, mainstream.
Okay. So there you go. That's the thought process that you had going into being super exuberant about getting the COVID-19 vaccine at your local pharmacy. Is you did your research on Google, you got the authorized stuff that Google algorithm is giving out to you. You weren't aware that there was, or look at other search engines that wasn't censoring, like DuckDuckGo, you didn't go there. You relied on the mainstream news, your local news and other mainstream news that you were privy to be reliable. And the information coming from the different agencies, you relied on them and 100% to be trustworthy and honest and give you the full information. So you felt like at the time, well, there is no adverse reactions or any kind of negative things that could happen. So this is a pretty logical idea at the time. Completely makes sense. Nobody can really judge you otherwise. It makes complete sense. So big tech censorship and also suppression of other alternatives for early home treatments aside from the shot was kind of what you kind of fell into.
Yeah.
Okay. So you experienced that firsthand and that's what brought you to the day that you got your shot. So let's go yeah. to the day that you got your shot. So were you given any other brands to choose from in your area, or was just this is what we have?
Actually there were. You could get, when I went to go make my appointment, you could get John, I don't know if you want me to say.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, and Pfizer. I picked Johnson & Johnson because it was honestly the most convenient time. Because I was so busy with work in school. I was like, the one that fits in my schedule. Because I didn't really know there was much of a difference except mm-hmm. between the one shot and two shots, and I was like, hey, this works out even better, then mm-hmm. I don't have to come back.
Yeah,
and again, looking back, it's like, why wouldn't you maybe take that those options and weigh them against each other? But again, like I just thought it was like the flu shot. Like I didn't know who made the flu shot. That's how I made my decision to kind of fit in my busy schedule.
Right, right. That's completely logical. You relied on the FDA they must have fully disclosed everything, so it must be safe and effective. So completely logical. So you got the Johnson & Johnson. And before you got it, did you have any pre-existing conditions or medical treatments or medications that you were taking before you got vaccinated?
I was taking birth control, like I think a lot of women my age, and I was taking a medication for migraines, which were one of my only pre-existing conditions. Mm-hmm. And I had a skin cancer, which was my only other pre-existing condition. I only took those medications and multivitamins, so nothing too crazy.
Yeah. So pretty much a clean bill of health prior to April of 2021. Okay.
Yeah.
So you can't really go, well, it could be because of this pre-existing condition that, you know, so there's nothing to link to something that's already existing. Tell us about the day that you got the J&J shot. So you went in, you sat down. Did the shot administer give you an information packet that, you know, that comes with the box to look at and read over for any kind of?
No. Oh man.
Yeah. Walk us through what happened that day.
It was a little bit of a chaos. But again, like I said, I kind of picked the time that fit into my schedule. So I didn't have a lot of time. I know they said you had to wait like 20-30 minutes after. So I was like, okay, I'm going to plan 15 minutes for the shot, 30 minute waiting. And that's my window. But when I got there, there was no signs. There was, people were in waiting in aisles with food and waiting in different aisles of the store. And there's random chairs places with people waiting. And I think I waited for probably an hour to get my shot, congested with all these other people. And when I heard my name, I went in. I didn't even see him pull the syringe. He was like, "What arm? Are you good? Sign this paper."
And did you read the paper? What was the paper that they had you sign?
Oh, I'm sorry. The paper was theirs reporting. It's the site that Walgreens was promoting at the time to report your symptoms. Okay. If you had anything.
Okay. And so they gave you a consent form that from the Thayer's reporting if you had anything. So you didn't use, did you read it or?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the paper that I signed, not the paper that he gave me. The paper that I signed when you got your vaccination card was like, are you pregnant? I don't remember what the other questions were. Like, oh, have you had any other reactions to prior vaccines? So you had to sign that to get your card. And then you went in the room, the nurse or doctor or whoever he was gave the shot. I didn't even see a box on the table, honestly.
There was no, they didn't pull out a box and say, here's your pamphlet that comes in the box, read that. Okay, so you didn't see anything, you didn't see the box, you didn't see any of the pamphlet that goes in the box?
No, okay. Just this little syringes on the table, all like out.
Okay, did they give you anything else besides the consent form to sign, to read? Did you read anything else at all?
Nope, that was it. The pamphlet that he gave me was the reporting that I took home, and nothing.
Okay, so you left home with a pamphlet to report to VAERS just if you have some symptoms. Okay.
Yeah.
So what happened after you got the shot? So you got a shot, you went home. What happened?
Yeah, I was already really late to get back to work. So I was like, you know what, I'm gonna be even later. Grabbed some lunch, was feeling good, was happy that I got my shot, got home, got settled in not an hour later. And I started getting really cold. And I honestly thought it's because I was really stressed, kept getting colder and colder. And within probably about 3-4 hours, I had 102 fever. And there wasn't much I did except do some work and eat lunch, between my vaccine and the fever. That was my first symptom.
Okay. Were you told of any kind of things to expect, like maybe a sore arm, maybe a fever?
Nope. The person that administered my shot, he just asked me to confirm my name, asked the arm again, signed the form, and then gave me my shot. No other conversation was had at that time.
Okay. So you got the 102 fever, and then how long did that last?
My fever was not reacting to any of the medications we were trying. So it got up to 103 and my fever lasts that high for about 3 days.
104 is brain damage.
103, I'm sorry.
Yeah, 104 is brain damage.
Okay, yeah.
If you get that high up, if it stays up for that high. So that's a very long time to be having a fever. Did anything else happen?
Yes. Oh man, I have my, I also want to say that it's, people ask why I can't just remember this word for word, or like if I have to look at something, it's because it was a very traumatic event. And I've had some trouble kind of going back to everything. So that's just a little hard talking about what kind of went on. So I had that fever and I was so cold, and I was sweating profusely, but I was cold. So my poor mother had to do so much laundry for me in that first week because I was just sweating through everything I laid on, but I was so cold. And I wasn't able to communicate really well. I was having trouble with my vision.
What happened with your vision?
It was very blurry, and I've had a lot of issues with my eyes still, with some ocular dysfunction.
Well, explain to people who may be experiencing that, like, so you got the fever, you got 103, it lasted for maybe about a week, and the fever, and then you started having blurriness in your vision. For how long did you have the blurriness in your vision?
It got better when the fever was coming down, but I still have this, it's kind of almost feels like when you look one way, like one eye is like slow catching up. So it's a little bit blurry and then it kind of clears itself out. When prior before I had a very low script for reading glasses. So my vision was, I thought pretty good at the time. But now it's like, it's almost like it's slow to catch up, to your brain. It's really hard to explain, but just, it's one of those things, like you kind of feel it. But if I was questioning if I was just like, oh, it's age, maybe my eyes are just getting bad. But if you have that sudden change, like you know, and you should trust yourself that it's that eye thing can possibly be a symptom.
Did you have any other symptoms before you decided to call the doctor? Did anything else come up?
I was completely exhausted. I couldn't, it almost felt like I had a bricks on my body. Like I couldn't elevate my arms. And if I did try to move, my blood pressure would just really elevate. And I felt like I would just have to lay down again. And that racing, like heart feeling, if I tried to move. So it was like I kind of had to just lay there. And I was also having
it's okay.
Leg pain. And
what does the leg pain feel like? What was the leg pain feel like? Because you're laying there, you're having a hard time lifting yourself and moving.
So I at that time the leg pain was like my upper legs and my back, and this burning feeling, but then I was also losing feeling in my legs. So it was a very weird sensation that I felt like I couldn't use my legs, like my brain couldn't tell my foot to bend my toes, but like if somebody came over and like moved my foot, they were like, okay, everything's functioning. Like I just couldn't connect it, and I felt like I was paralyzed from my hips to my toes.
How long did that last, that paralyzed feeling?
So that lasted about 3 days too with the fever.
So you couldn't move for 3 days? You couldn't lift your legs, your arms? It just felt like there was a brick on all your whole body for 3 days?
Yep. That first night I moved myself to the bathroom and I did not leave that spot for 3 days. My mom did come to obviously bring me food and water, but I could not move. We just couldn't move. And we did call the doctor, that first night. I called my mom and I was like, something is not right. And she called, left a message. They called right back and they were like, this is great. Like, you're having a good side effect. And I was like, what?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. This is interesting. Okay. So, so the first night your mother called the doctors and they're saying, oh, this is just a really good side effect. It means that medicine's working. Is that the response that you got?
Yes. Yep. They're like, that means your body is doing what it's doing to, again, I'm not a scientist, to fight the vaccine or get the antibodies, whatever it needs to do to fight COVID. And so we were like, great. And they were like, the most it would last is 3 days.
But it lasted for a week.
Oh, well, I still have symptoms.
Okay.
But, yeah. Okay. Severe fever. The fever that I had lasted for about a week.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you were doing this, did you look up, you found a list of symptoms that you were looking at that kind of raised some concerns for you? What is this list that you were looking at about adverse reactions that were possible?
So it did say fever, arm pain, and I think chills. And I was like, yeah, okay, I have those.
Okay. And where did you get this list?
Google.
Okay. So you found a list on Google. You decided, oh, I'm bedridden, so let me just see what Google says. And that's what the list said. It didn't say anything else. So you're like, okay, well, I guess I'm getting the normal stuff for this vaccine. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's move forward to past that week. So can you show us where in your body you were feeling the pain? Because it sounds like it was all over. There was no specific parts that were feeling more than the other.
Yeah. I mean, most of my pain, I still use my cane.
So why are you using a cane now?
I never fully regained feeling in my legs.
After that first week?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so help us to understand this for people who might be going through this or wanting to know about this symptom in advance in case somebody that they love or themselves is starting to notice this.
Yep.
Help us to understand. So you couldn't get your body to move your legs after that first week. And then have you ever been able to regain your ability to walk since then?
So in those first couple of days, I did have such a high fever that making decisions thinking clearly wasn't really all possible. So people asked me why I didn't go to the ER sooner. And at the time it was hard for me to make those decisions. So if other people can see those symptoms for you, is really important too.
Right. So wait, do you live by yourself?
I do.
So you live by yourself. So there's nobody to go, hey, you don't look right.
Yeah.
Or I noticed you're off. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
You call the doctor. They said everything's fine. You're getting the exact normal symptoms. You looked up Google again just to see, are my symptoms completely off? And you're going, oh, I guess according to this list I found off Google, it's expected. So this should wear off. But it never wore off. So what happened to the point? So how do you get around until you decide to get the cane?
Yeah. So those first 3 days, if I had to move in the bathroom, I would literally just pull myself up on my arms. And then at the, I think it was like day 4 or 5, my mom's like, okay, something more needs to be done. but she wasn't seeing me all day. I was kind of just talking to her on the phone a lot. We ended up my doctor got me on steroids. I'm sorry, not that first time.
So it took like 2 weeks of you dealing with it, because they're like, yeah, just normal, just keep on, you know, it will pass. And so you're like, oh, I'm listening to the doctors on the phone, and you're dealing with it. And then at some point you're like, well, this dealing with it is more serious than what they're saying it is. So you had to use crutches to get into the hospital. Was that what happened?
Yeah. So we had kept calling, and I was like, this isn't getting any better. At the time it was a lot of like, drink a lot of water. And I was like, I drink a lot of water. I don't drink coffee or, tea. So like water is all I drink a lot of the time. And being a prior healthy person, it kind of made me feel bad. I was like, what am I doing wrong? That I can't move my legs. And it was very weird. After those couple days, of the high fever, I started getting some of the feeling back from like my hips down. Mm-hmm. And then I was getting that severe burning pain. So I had pain, like no pain. It feels like it's in your bone level. Like it's not like a muscle pain that, being an athlete my whole life, I have lots of, muscle creams, and like I was using everything I had and nothing would take away the pain.
What does it feel like when your legs burn? What does that feel like?
If I can't even describe this level of pain, like I've broken so many bones, but this is not like, nothing takes it away. And you have to, if you feel like it's that level of pain, it's not, you need to get to the doctor earlier than I did.
But you only waited 2 weeks afterwards.
Yeah.
And it was still that intense. So you got your crutches, your mom took you to the hospital. Describe the scene of the hospital when you went in. Was it super busy? Like what is being promoted or?
It actually wasn't. The first time they were like, okay, like tell you some, I was using the crutches. So at that point, like I said, like half my legs were kind of like this burning pain and half of it was just numb and dangling. So I could like prop myself up and like just, it honestly feels like muscle memory. You just kind of like swing your legs. And I was just, my feet would just dangle around. And they were like, this is great. Like, it's a great reaction. Like, you know what? Like, we don't know why you feel like this. Here's some IV fluids and some muscle relaxers and goodbye.
Wait a minute. Yeah. So you had to take crutches to get yourself into the hospital after the doctors told you this is normal symptoms, just stay at home, it'll pass. You try to deal with it for 2 weeks. You went into the hospital with the crutches. You physically cannot get up on your own and walk around. And they're going, this is great. That's the normal for this vaccine. It means that your body is working to build the necessary stuff to protect you.
Yeah.
What did you and your mother think when you heard that from the doctors, when they're telling somebody who cannot walk, who just got the vaccine and they've been talking to for the last 2 weeks, and this is what they say? What was going on through your mind?
I thought I was crazy. My mom was just literally like, she's the best advocate. She had her phone up and she actually was on my Instagram and she was like, this girl was like flipping around and now she can't move her legs. And they were like, we don't know. they just didn't have much to say.
They just said they don't know why you can't walk yourself. And this must be normal for the vaccine. And they didn't raise any concern at all?
No, not at that point. So we were like, what do we do? And my mom helped me get back out and helped me get back home.
Okay, so did they do any kind of testing when you went to the hospital and could barely walk?
No, and because of COVID, they've been limited on like physical examinations. So they didn't do one. They didn't do a neurological exam. They pretty much just asked me what was going on. And they were like, we don't know. It might not even be the vaccine. Like, it's kind of a long time at this point, but if it's, they didn't know.
They said it's probably not because of the vaccine because it's been a long time.
Yeah, that was.
That was 2 weeks ago, and you didn't have any issues before that. But 2 weeks ago, you got the vaccine, and then now you can't walk. And the doctor's going, we're not going to test you. We have no tests to test you on because of our policy at this time. And we don't know what's wrong with you. It's probably just normal because that's just a reaction to the vaccine. It means it's working for you.
Yeah.
So go home.
Yeah.
That's literally what they said. Please go back home and get better on your own, even though you can't walk now. Did you find that in any bit unusual?
Oh yeah, we were very concerned. I was very concerned because I was like, is this irreversible? Is this, it was really scary. But again, I had to trust the doctors that I was just going to wake up the next day and feel better. And it just didn't happen.
Yeah. Did you and your mother and your family try getting a second or third opinion at other hospitals to see if there was something different that they could do or say after looking at you?
Not at other hospitals, but we did see some private doctors, a neurologist, a rheumatologist.
Okay. So that was the first hospital visit. Tell us about every hospital visit you had since then. And
yeah.
What test did they do on you, and what did the test reveal?
Yeah. So we went to the hospital about 3 weeks later. In between that time, we saw the neurologist. I was not doing any better. If anything, I was doing worse.
What do you mean by worse? Describe what worse means.
It definitely in terms of the fatigue, and a lot more leg pain. I was getting a lot of feeling back. But as the feeling came back, the pain was there. So I pretty much almost had feeling, but the pain was so bad, and I was having a lot of nausea because of it, and poor appetite and everything that comes along with that severe pain. So that's when we went to the hospital the second time. And again, they were pretty much like, really don't know. They asked if I like injured it at this point. Like, there was no conversation of it being related to the vaccine at that point. And that was about 6 weeks after the vaccine. So they were.
Yeah. So like about 6 weeks afterwards, you guys went in for another visit at the hospital to go, it's not getting better. There's something wrong. She still can't walk. And they're basically doing the same thing of just disregarding the injury.
Yeah. And at that point we went to the same hospital, because they had my records. Mm-hmm. And we're like, look, we were here 3 weeks ago with the same exact thing. And at that point you were like, maybe it's the vaccine, like maybe not, like, and now you're like, no, it's not. But it was the same thing that was going on. And that's why we went to the same place with my records, in the closest hospital. Cause obviously my mom didn't want to take me too far. And again, we were like, at this point they did do some tests, because we really pushed.
What does pushing? I mean, like, because I really want to understand this. When they disregard you the first time, and the second time, when you finally went in, and this is the third time, and you guys are really pushing, what did you guys have to say to advocate for yourself to get medical treatment instead of being pushed away for the third time?
I had to say, can you call my neurologist, so that they can tell you that they've seen that something is, they knew me before and they can tell you that I need to be treated. I've said, like, this is, I can't leave here. Like, I feel like something is really wrong. Or asking to talk to the doctor again. And just trying to say, like, I need something. Like, it's a real terrible position to kind of be in, to have to be like, you're the doctor, but I need your help. Like, you need to help. Like, and
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you could, because this is interesting to me, because, you know, that you have to convince your doctor to treat you. Like, yeah. You have to seriously, because not everybody is going to be that much of a bulldog to self-advocate for themselves in this situation. And so you finally got to the point where you pressed your doctors to treat you. And so when they finally did, what kind of tests did they put you through to see what was going on?
Yeah, at that visit we did, because I was still having, if I tried to move or exert myself, I was getting that really high blood pressure and like palpitating feeling. So they did an EKG, which did come back normal.
The EKG, what was that? What were they looking for when they did that test?
Anything related to the heart.
Okay.
And obviously at that point they listened with like a stethoscope, ruled out lungs, and heart, and they also did an ultrasound of my legs, to see if they could see anything pain wise internally, and blood clots, because that was coming out in the news, that point with Johnson & Johnson. So we were very scared.
And what did the test reveal on the legs?
They were negative. Okay. There was no blood clots, nothing that they could see. So it was kind of a bummer at that point, but then they were like, nothing in those two tests, you're good to go. And again, I dragged myself out, miserably on crutches. And at that point I was living with my parents at that point, because I couldn't do everything I needed to do for work and school and still maintain my house. So at that 6 week point was probably the lowest of the symptoms.
So then you moved in with your parents at that point, because you needed somebody to care for you,
mm-hmm.
like physically care for you, because you needed a caregiver. After six weeks after getting the jab, you needed a caregiver. And you went to the hospital, they did these two tests, nothing came through. So they say, oh, well, we didn't see anything on the test, so you're totally fine. Keep walking on your crutches out of the hospital back to your house. There's nothing wrong with you, even though you're walking on your crutches. But 6 weeks earlier, you were doing flips.
Yeah. And I was, a year before, I was so excited to be so independent, and this took it all away.
So that was the next. What happened? Did you take any more hospital visits after that? Because I'm sure you've been having more and more. So let's go through every single one of your hospital visits after the 6 week. And what did they do? What was found?
Yeah. So from that 6 week point to about 3 or 4 weeks ago now. So almost a 2.5 month gap,
mm-hmm.
Where my neurologist did put me on a steroid that helped to an extent, and also a nerve medication.
So the steroid and the nerve medication that they put you on, what are those supposed to address?
So the steroid was, they assumed that I had spinal cord swelling at that point because of the test that they did, at some neurology appointments. They did, some nerve sensory tests, and determined I had lost nerve sensings all the way up to my C3.
And C3 is what? C3 is what?
I think it's like in your neck. It's a little bit higher up.
Okay.
It's up to my vertebrae for my spinal cord.
You had no nerve sensory up to there.
Yeah. Okay. Loss of nerve sense. So I could move, but that was explaining why I was having a hard time moving and having all this pain. And so they had diagnosed me with the spinal cord inflammation.
And to define what is spinal cord inflammation?
It's, as it was described to me, is pretty much like everything is really inflamed in my body. And it's causing all of the nerve senses in my legs to be inflamed. And that's why it felt like I was having those pins and needles and neuropathy pain. And if they were able to get the swelling down, then everything would feel better.
Okay, so all the nerves in your body are inflamed to the point that you can't sense anything all the way up to almost your neck?
Yep, and that's okay. Pretty much as casually as I was told.
And didn't tell you what caused the inflammation in all of your nerves?
Nope.
They couldn't find anything?
Nope. They just kind of said it can happen.
It can happen out of no reason, out of no...
That I must have did something.
Yeah. Okay, so the doctors tested you and they did the nerve test and they found that your whole body, all the nerves in your body are completely inflamed, which is what they diagnosed you as, spinal cord inflammation. But the reason why all of a sudden, within the last 6 weeks, you developed this, they don't know why. And it just happens. It just happens that your whole body, the nerves are just going to inflame and basically prevent you from walking. It just happens out of the blue.
Yeah.
Okay.
We did obviously see many doctors, and we did finally find some doctors that have been working with us and have looked at my prior test, and they very much believe it was caused by the vaccine.
Okay. So you went to different doctors at this point after getting the same runaround from the hospital that had your records. Now you were like, we're going to go see different doctors and go to as many different ones as possible to try to get something.
Yep. But we kept getting bounced around because nobody knew what was going on. So they were like, is this an orthopedic? So I went to an orthopedic.
What did they find?
Nothing. Bones were all good.
Okay.
Rheumatologist.
What does the rheumatologist do?
They did a lot of blood work.
And
unfortunately, there's limited blood work that you can get, and it only tests for certain things at this point. So my blood work came back okay.
Okay. So let me ask you this: with the rheumatologist, when they're doing the blood work, did they ever look at your blood cells underneath a microscope to see if there's any kind of anomalies or anything different? That did they ever do that kind of test?
Not that I know of, and I wouldn't have even known to ask for that kind of test at the time.
That came back, and that was the test that they gave you. What other tests did they give you?
At that point, not that much. It wasn't until this last hospital visit that the majority of the testing was done, which was about 5 months later.
The 5 months that you've been dealing this with, five months now that you haven't been able to walk since you got the J&J vaccine. And when you went, because you in this last visit, you went and you were testing for Guillain-Barré syndrome. Am I correct?
Correct.
So what is the process for testing for that syndrome? I don't know if I'm saying it right. Guillain-Barré syndrome?
Yeah. I had to get the spinal cord, spinal tap. I'm sorry.
Spinal tap.
Unfortunately, I had a very bad experience. I don't know if you want me to go into...
Yeah, go into all the details. So people want to know the medical so they can know what to look out for.
Yeah.
And prepare themselves.
So 5 months later, I know these are the same symptoms that I had 4 hours after that vaccine. And I'm still fighting to get the medical care that I need. I decide that I need to go back to the hospital because I was starting to spike a fever again. And I was just declining very fast, and I knew that if I waited at this point I had all the function in my legs. I just had that pain, but the numbness was starting to come back with that fever. And I knew if it kept going down from my hips, I was not gonna be able to walk again. So I was like, I need to get to the hospital now. So I texted my boss and I was like, I need to call out. Like, I don't know what's happening. And at that point I thought I was just gonna like go to the hospital. They were gonna say like, you're fine again, give me a steroid, and I was gonna go on my way. We get to the hospital and they look at me like I'm crazy, because at this point I was starting to have these terrible tremors.
What was the tremors like, and where were you getting the tremors?
Yeah. So this is a symptom newer to the second, whatever was going on, but I couldn't control my arms. They were literally like flapping. The numbness was coming back in my legs, and I couldn't control my arms. And then I lost control of my bladder and bowels. And this was all within the waiting room time of the ER.
Oh goodness. So did you soil yourself?
I did.
Yes. Okay. Did you also have a BM?
Not at that point, but yeah, it was not.
You completely lost control. So here, yes, in the waiting room. Mm-hmm. Yep. Code 9 on aisle waiting room. Yep. So,
yeah.
Okay.
So that they helped me with my crutches, dragged me to a bed, and they were like, what's going on? And I was like, this is the same things that started happening to me right after the vaccine, and it's happening again. And I can't feel like any more thing in my body, and my arms were going, and I know I looked really crazy. And they were literally like, we'll get back to you. And they left me in the room like that. And there was like a call button thing. So just laying there, and I knew I had to go to the bathroom again. And so I kept hitting the call button because I couldn't move. And they never came. So
what do you mean they never came? Like, they never came back to your room?
They didn't respond to my call button. So I had to go. So I decided to try to get out of bed, and I fell. So I fell on my wrist in the ER, and then went to the bathroom again.
They crawled to the bathroom and okay.
Yeah. And I stayed on the floor for about 10 minutes before someone came and they helped me get back into bed. And it ended up being about a 12-hour back and forth between my neurologist trying to get me admitted at this point and the ER doctors trying to literally sedate me and send me on my way.
Why would they want to sedate you? What would be the point of sedating you?
They said that I was going to control my arm tremors. And they thought that was really just going to fix my problems at the moment. So I was like, am I making this up? Why are they trying to sedate me? Like, it was very weird. Like, I feel like I was trying to tell them something was wrong, and they were like, no, you're wrong. So this last visit was not great until I got admitted and they started doing tests finally.
Okay. So you could still talk during that visit where they were trying to sedate you. Some people can't talk in that condition, but you could still advocate for yourself. And your mother wasn't with you at that visit.
No, this was in the ER trying to get admitted. And she came shortly after that. But I could talk. But again, I said I was getting that fever again. And when you have such a high fever and you're in such pain, mm-hmm. and you're scared, and obviously you're more angry and more like defensive, like, hey, I need help, like, this right. isn't right. And they take that as like, what's it wasn't the greatest.
So what happened? So how did you get home? I mean, what did they do for you, and how did you get home?
So I ended up getting admitted.
Okay.
And I was there for 6 days. So the first 3 days was testing. Unfortunately, it was during, we had a really bad storm on the East Coast. So a lot of the doctors couldn't get in. So it took about 3 days to get a spinal tap, an MRI of my back and my brain with contrast. And
what did the MRI reveal in your tests when you did the brain and the back MRIs?
So actually the MRIs did not show anything at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But they did some neurological tests to see that I really couldn't use my legs. And that's when they decided to do the IV steroid for inflammation, essentially to get the spinal cord to, again, what they said is my body was in inflammation and the steroid would calm it down.
Did it calm it down?
So this time it actually worked to a very manageable level. I am able to be back on my own now. But I do still have nerve pain in my feet. So that at this point, that is my only remaining symptom. But we're worried about permanent damage because I didn't get that IV steroid sooner.
Right.
Because they think that really calms down the inflammation. And if we got it sooner, maybe I would have gave me all of the feeling back.
So what did they do in terms of the Guillain-Barré syndrome? I mean, where does that come into the picture?
Yeah, so that's why they did the spinal tap, and it did come back as negative for that.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, but again, there's only so many tests they can do, and there's no tests for everything.
Right.
So I just don't think exactly what happened to me directly after, is known. I have been diagnosed after this last visit with the chronic neuropathy pain.
What does that mean?
So that means I pretty much will always have this tingling feeling in my feet.
Forever? For a long time? Indefinitely? Unknown?
Yeah, there's no real treatments for neuropathy right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So the tingling and stinging on your feet that you still have, how does that affect your ability to walk?
That's why I still use the cane. Just because when I get really bad, or if I have to walk too long of a distance, the pain just becomes unbearable, and then I can't do things.
Are you working from home now, or are you having to walk into the office?
No, thankfully, my job has been great about letting me work from home.
Okay.
So I've still been able to do that. But finishing that last little bit of school was really tough, and I couldn't go to a lot of the events because I was so excited to get the vaccine again because I could go to events and I could go do things again. And then I wasn't able to, because nobody knew how to help me, 5 months ago.
Yeah. So that whole 5 month struggle back and forth with the doctors and the hospitals to try to get something to address your symptoms that you basically had immediately, and you were not able to walk within the first couple of days. And it has been that way all the way until 5 months later, when finally somebody decided to give you steroids for the inflamed nerves. Is that the case? And that's what has happened. That's what has helped you be able to be mobile and then finally move back in and live on your own again.
Yeah. But I still hope there's going to be a lot more research into this specifically. Because again, like, just because something didn't come up on the tests yet doesn't mean that something's not going on.
I find it It's just so unbelievable that the doctors would, because they don't know anything, would basically keep pushing you away because they, instead of doing all the tests, doing all the other stuff, and then you have to advocate and push through to almost guilt them into treating you. And then you finally get somewhere with somebody going through all these different hospitals, and then they finally throw everything at you, and they finally throw the steroids, and that's what worked. If they would have done all the tests early on, maybe it would have addressed it 5 months ago instead of 5 months later when you're so much worse.
Exactly.
I mean, what does your family feel about that timeline?
Oh man, I think it's been really, really, really hard on my parents, seeing me sick, because it's like I should be the one helping them and doing things for them, and mm-hmm. instead they've had to be my caregivers again, and it's been hard on us mentally and financially, and I again, like, having the burden of moving back in with them, it just took a lot out of everybody, and it's something I feel bad about, that I couldn't get myself better because there was no information out there yet. And it was pretty tough.
Did you ever talk to the doctors, and, you know, because no one's acknowledged a link that all of this coincidental injuries that you had suffered since you got the vaccine, is possibly linked to the vaccine as the cause? Like, there has never been that conversation with you and your doctors. Would they ever link it? Did any of them ever say yes? I think you said earlier your neurologist said yes, yeah, this is because. Okay.
Yeah. No. She definitely still thinks it is. It's never, and we actually did report it with that one neurologist. We did report to the CDC and VAERS, what was going on, and Johnson & Johnson. So we did cover our bases pretty early on. Mm-hmm. That was, I think, the 3rd or 4th week we got everything reported. And I'm sorry, I went.
No, that's that's really good that you have your family, army of advocates to self-advocate for you at the hospitals, because not everybody has somebody to bring with them and just kind of push through and advocate for care, and that they did the due diligence in reporting all this, so you have this documented, because not everybody has that.
Yeah.
So which is really, really rare. So
yeah,
you know, the FDA document shows that which I'm going to put in the description, it shows that the clinical trials for the Pfizer mRNA COVID vaccine, which is one of the first that opened up for a series of others like Johnson & Johnson, that it has no long-term safety data, meaning that they did not undergo years of testing on human beings before authorizing it to the rest of the world, okay? It may have taken many decades to come up with the mRNA technology, according to their medical research, but in terms of actually testing it on human subjects for long-term, there is no long-term safety data. So regardless of that aspect of the conversation, there is 9 months of data on vaccine injuries since the vaccination rollout in the US, since basically December of 2020. Yeah, for the early recipients. So typically in the US and around the world, doctors share information within hospital networks. And that's how they would find out, like, oh, I got this patient that has this, so let me look up if anybody else in the network has a similar thing, so they can kind of study notes and learn. So from your experience, why are your doctors clueless as to what's happening to you? Like, what's your thought on that? Because you get this over and over again. So yeah. Like, do you have any resources as a doctor?
I really feel like had nothing to go off of. Because it was unlike anything else they've seen. And it wasn't to the point where I was on my deathbed. I was just I was in a lot of pain and I was uncomfortable. So there wasn't that urgency either. It was just kind of like,
really?
What was that?
No urgency. No urgency. No, did they expect this to happen? Did they expect that you were going to be on your deathbed if you had these injuries?
No, I mean, felt really, really bad. And I really genuinely think some of my doctors feel really bad. I mean, still do, and are doing their best. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And she still feels bad and is still trying to get resources. And that's why she did all the reporting. But it's so hard to find. And even now, like, I'm trying to Google what's going on. And the only thing I can find that about, besides those main couple, symptoms, I think they still have listed are like short-term, fever, chills, arm soreness. And I'm Googling like, what else could possibly happen after a vaccine? And like, I was trying to do research on this kind of stuff. My friends were sending me articles that they were literally digging through the bottom of the internet to find.
Are they using Google? Are they still using Google?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. I'm going to give you guys a clue. Okay. Because I have been doing digital marketing. Yeah. No, I've been doing digital marketing for 20 years and I know how to get past the algorithms and the censorship. Use DuckDuckGo. It's a search engine. You can Google DuckDuckGo, download it, and then you can download the app. And it make it your permanent browser on whatever browser you use. You can make it your permanent search query. DuckDuckGo does not censor any information that is against the WHO or that is different than the narrative of get the vaccine. The vaccine is safe. It's effective. So you'll get everything on the internet.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so use DuckDuckGo. So if you're digging at the bottom of the barrel for information to just get a little bit of a heads up of what does this symptom feel like? What does that symptom feel like? You know, whatever. Or if they prescribe something, you'll get more information on DuckDuckGo and you'll get it from sources, news sources and resources from around the world.
Oh, wow.
So, With Google, you can type something, but you may not get information on what they're finding in Israel, in the UK, in New Zealand, in Australia, in Singapore. You may not get that. You make the same search on DuckDuckGo, you'll get that. And then you'll get a full world picture of the vaccination rollout and what they have been discovering.
Okay.
Okay, that's so that I'll help you guys out so you guys don't keep spinning your wheels and getting frustrated going, you know, 5 months later, I'm still not getting anything on the internet. So that's why. And that falls under big tech censorship. And Google is one of those. So, So your friends are sending you these articles and you're still looking for it. And what's happening with the material that you're getting so far?
Yeah. So honestly, a lot of the information I'm getting is from, I found Facebook groups of people that have the same exact symptoms, and it blows my mind how similar they are and how we're trying to help each other out, and we're like, can you find this stuff on the internet? And like, we'll find some case studies from some university and we can't even decipher what it was really saying, and we were starting to find testimonies from other people. And that was like our main way of being like, hey, did you find something that works? Like, hey, do you have a doctor that can help me? Like, that was our network. It's really been amazing how so many people that unfortunately are going through this are finding each other and helping each other. But it just needs to be more mainstream, because I'm very lucky that I have my own computer and I can, just go on Facebook when I have time, and I have that luxury. What if somebody doesn't have that and like is watching the news on anywhere in the world, and that's where they're getting their information, and there's nothing. And if you do try to get it out there, it gets taken down.
What? So you tried to get some of it out there. Did you experience some of the suppression of your comments and of your posts, or some did you go, because you're on Facebook, did you get put in Facebook jail for telling your truth?
So luckily I didn't get that far.
Okay.
I started on Instagram, and it was about the 2 month mark, because that's when I started to get really like down, because I hadn't ridden my horse in 2 months, and I wasn't exercising, and so I was like, I'm gonna share my some of my story, because at that point we didn't know a lot, with my friends, and hopefully it'll make up for me being so absent, because I didn't even have that clear diagnosis to be like, hey, I'm sorry this happens, like I need to rest. I was just kind of like, I feel cruddy and I don't know why, and neither do my doctors.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to post it, and it got taken down probably 5 minutes later. And it was because I used the words Johnson & Johnson and vaccine. And it said it went against CDC. I don't remember. But I did try to like screenshot it. And then like, once you like touch the notification, it went away. And I was like, what the heck? So I later found out you can't actually use the full word anymore. Or you get either a CDC banner like placed on it, with the website, or you get a message that it violated their terms and agreements and it gets taken down.
Okay. So this is a very fascinating, phenomenon that almost every single vaccine injured person, or even any person who says anything against the efficacy and safety of the vaccine from the firsthand experience, are experiencing it is the suppression of their own comments, the suppression of their own firsthand information, just to talk to their friends and family. They don't even have a public one. It's not public. They're not a public figure, but it's just private social media account, and they're getting that. I would recommend, because this falls into the reason why you didn't get any information about possible adverse events that other people may have experienced, because they experienced that as well. So you were completely in the dark on potential adverse reactions, completely had no informed consent with regards to information that you get from your friends and family, because earlier you said you were talking to your friends and family to see, you know, what their thoughts on the vaccine was, if there was anything negative that you should be aware of and consider as part of your decision making. You didn't see any of that, and now you're experiencing firsthand the reasons why people still don't see much of that information, because you're getting that censorship. There is actually an app I want you to download. It's called Mobizen, M-O-B-I-Z-E-N, Mobizen, on your phone. And whenever you get you get one of those notifications that you violated whatever medical conduct for telling your story or anything, you open up that app, it opens up on your phone, and then you go back to the screen of your in your case, Facebook or Instagram. And then you just hit, there's a record button where you can record how you scroll through and see, oh, look, this is what they said. Or you can take a picture of the image, and then you'll have evidence of the censorship that you are experiencing in your own private social media accounts. So you have that as evidence for how big tech is suppressing your information with your personal family and friends. Okay. So I'll put that link down on the description for everybody, so they know which app that is, because everybody should have that evidence, because so in case like one of your friends or family was like, hey, Bianca, I didn't hear about your last update on your hospital visit. What did they say? Then you can say, I tried to post that, but they deleted it.
Yeah.
So it wasn't because I didn't respond.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, as a standard in clinical trials, it is a really big deal to explain the serious nature of adverse events and possible death that can arise from participating in an experimental medical treatment. you know, and we're talking about censorship and you experience it firsthand, what are your thoughts on the lack of media transparency regarding these mRNA vaccines?
It just makes us feel unheard, and I never was or are anti-vaccination, and I feel like that's the only, like, I just want to get help for myself. Like, I'm not attacking you. Like, I just want to know what I can do to feel better. And I just want, if there's something that we can do, if they can just help. And I don't know why it can't not be public. If they're saying it's not a large percentage of the population that could possibly have adverse side effects, well then help us out with what are those adverse side effects, and like how can they be helped?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So and you're not even able to share or be previewed to that.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So you know, that makes the question, what are your thoughts on our government and health agencies instituting vaccine mandates and passports in order to pressure people into getting vaccinated in order to participate in society? Knowing what you know now, what are your thoughts on that?
Knowing what I know now, I get asked a lot, like, would I have not got the vaccine? And at that time, I think I made the best decision.
Yeah, with what you knew, yeah.
Yeah, and now that there are, I'm firsthand of what you can experience. And I've talked to many other people who have shared their stories with me, and it's like, how can you mandate something but then not acknowledge us? And it just makes us again feel very unheard and scared. And the longer this goes on, it's really scary. And I want everyone to make the best decision for their own health, and not because of a mandate.
Right.
And I want everyone to be safe. And if there's somebody that possibly shouldn't get the vaccine because this side effect would really hurt them, if they had like autoimmune disease, they need to know so that they can make the best decision for themselves.
Right, right. Yeah, a lot of the main sources of media, basically everybody qualifies for the vaccine.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily the case. I think they're going to try to get it available for children 5 to 11. But there's no long-term safety data of human trials on 5 to 11. Yeah. And they're going to roll it out, and parents are going to give it to the kids, trusting the health authorities and the federal government is being transparent and honest. And you are firsthand knowledge that you didn't even get that all the full information before you made the decision. So, so you're really for medical choice and no restrictions regardless of the choice that people make.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's always some exceptions to the rules. Like if I think with this vaccine, it's just a little too early to tell. But I could see in the future if they are able to fix what's going on, like, is this going to be the next, like, are you going to get this with your flu shot? Cause again, I am very for science, and I do hope that again, like, we can get people healthy. But there needs to be some more evidence about what's right. happening.
Right. So there needs to be more long-term published data of actual human trials, like not cutting corners, like all the other vaccines as everyone out have a long-term to save the data. Okay. You know, the injuries really caused you a lot of depression and, you know, really affected your mental health. What are your thoughts running through your mind?
It just gets me really down because I can't do everything that the summer and fall that everyone else did, and I'm still seeing now it's all the fall festivals over on the East Coast, and I can't go and do them with my friends, and I don't really know exactly why, or like what caused this inflammation, because I know, like, but we don't know how to fix it, and like we can't get everybody on board. So it just that's what keeps running through your mind, and like how you're disappointing people, and like you can't fix yourself and you can't take care of people, and I can't do everything that I want to do, because I need to work and I need to like do the bare minimum of what my energy allows me to do. So it's a lot of missing out, and that lack of interaction is it just wears on you.
You know, Bianca, victim shaming is a real phenomenon right now, unfortunately. And for a lot of the vaccinated, your injuries break the illusion that the vaccine is safe and effective completely, which results in a lot of denial and anger in people for you breaking your silence. So what do you say to people who accuse you of misinformation for telling your firsthand experience?
Yeah, so this last hospital experience was a couple weeks ago, is when I finally shared my full story on Instagram, and I made sure that I made it so I couldn't violate any of their word agreements, because I needed my friends to know what was going on. And I hate having to do that, but whatever I had to do to get it out there. And it ended up being shared on a page on Facebook for people. And it had, I think like 10,000 likes before I even left the hospital. There was so many comments, and I started getting a lot of the hate and the shame. And it was the picture of my hospital bed. There's the, oh my God, why can't I think of the medical word?
Well, what were some of the, go ahead.
Yeah, this was just my victim shaming experience, where like, I was in this hospital room, and there was the, what you used to go to the bathroom when you can't actually make it, right, at the foot of my bed. And he was like, if you actually can walk, why is that there? And I was like, at the time I was using a bedpan, but it's pretty standard in hospitals to just have that stuff there. So they were just trying to pick out things to make my story unbelievable. And just mean things about how it's my fault that I got it. So I have to deal with the consequences.
Right. The whole, you deserve it because you didn't do enough research. Exactly. But you did your research. You didn't know at the time that Google, YouTube, Facebook was censoring all the information that goes against the vaccine is safe and effective. And everybody should get it according to the WHO material. So you did your research. You didn't know where else to go besides those sources. And you just trusted the information was going to be reliable and transparent. And everything that was disclosed would be disclosed so that you could make informed consent. So, you know, those type of comments of you deserve it for not making more effort to do the research doesn't really fly when you did what you were supposed to do. You just didn't know that they were censoring some of the other information.
Exactly.
So you really are a victim of big tech censorship before you got the vaccine, and even now that you are sharing your story, you're still being affected by that. So that's the whole different argument there. So, you know, you had said something, you know, when we were arranging this, and you had said, Vaughn, aren't you scared? Because I'm kind of scared. And I want you to explain for everybody else why it is such a brave thing for somebody who's vaccine injured at this time regarding the COVID-19 vaccines to tell their story and share their story with all of the criticism of people who, unless you are 6 feet under, you're lying. Can you explain that concept of being scared to tell your story?
Yeah. Because like, you know what's actually going on and you know the truth. And then you go share your story when you're already not, you're still not feeling well. Like, I still have really bad days. And if I'm, my physical health isn't great, my mental health might be down. And if people are judging my story and all I'm doing, trying to do is help, and they're telling me I'm wrong and I made a mistake, and then that just makes me feel worse about myself. And it's really draining to go through that. So if you can share your story and be able to kind of let that go, not that you should have to, it's really hard, and it's helped a lot of people. I've gotten people that have messaged me, that my story has helped them in one way or another. And you just have to keep fighting so that you can reach those people, who were feeling alone and didn't have that advocate in the beginning. So it's just really important, and it's scary to have all of that criticism. But once you get to find the people and help them, it's really, it's worth it. And everyone should get to feel that help.
Yeah. You know, Bianca, that's the main reason why I started Sivar, was because I have a Buddhism podcast. It's a spirituality podcast. And I had some people, it gets broadcasted mostly to India and Asia and the rest of the world. But, you know, it gets sent out there on the ethers. And I had listeners of that podcast reach out saying, I am getting censored. I can't make comments. I don't know what's going on social media. I just want to share my story with my friends and family. I'm not able to do it. You know, all they want is to share their story, share their symptoms, share what they're seeing in the hospitals, what they're experiencing with the doctors. A lot of it is happening in real time. Nobody knows what's going on with these people because there's no long-term safety data on human trials, and a couple months, 6 months is not long term. So even a year is not long term. So nobody really knows what's going on, and they're learning in real time. And in the middle of the doctors and the hospitals that these people are working with, who are learning in real time from these patients, their symptoms are getting worse in some cases, and they're literally slowly, you know, dying, no other word, for some of these people. And so they don't have the time to wait for everybody to get it together. They just want to find each other so they can share resources and information, so they can help look for some things to help with their symptoms, so they can live a little bit with less suffering. And so not being scared to share your stories, to share your pictures of the hospital. Maybe you don't look as beautiful as you typically want to look, but share the ugly. Share the ugly in the hospital. Share the ugly every day. This is what it's like living with this symptom.
Not doing your hair.
Not doing your hair. Not feeling great. You know, what? Everything. The good, the bad, the ugly, the frustrating. Everything that comes with this is what you are going through. And there are other people going through similar situations. They may not have the same exact symptoms, but if enough people share this information, the ones who, if you happen to be yourself or a family or friend who's unfortunate enough to start developing these adverse reactions immediately or months or years later, whereas you didn't previously have anything, if you can, like you had discovered, easily find others who share this information and you can learn from them, then you can know how to advocate for yourself in the hospitals. You know what to ask. You know how to describe your symptoms. You know what to expect because everybody else has been telling you this is what they went from this hospital in this part of the country or this part of the world, whatever. So it is a resource. But the thing that is fascinating is the victim shaming that you get from the public. You don't need the victim shaming when you're struggling to be healthy and survive. So what's your last message for people who are either vaccinated or unvaccinated who victim shame the people who are injured?
Oh, man.
Just give it to them, girl.
Oh, man. my calm yogi side wants to be like, everyone just be nice. I've really found that, like, having to be in the situation where I have to rely on other people, you really realize, like, how much kindness there is. And I just really hope that these people that are leaving these mean messages find some of that kindness, because maybe they're struggling in another way and they're just, it's coming out here, and we can't let that harm us, because we need to keep fighting to get answers and get help for ourselves, because we deserve it.
Yeah. Well, Bianca, thank you so much for being so brave to fight through the heavy censorship to tell your experience. And I'm going to care for your story and broadcast it worldwide. So you can find and follow Bianca's story as her recovery and as her experience evolves on her Facebook profile, which is facebook.com/Bianca.Dawson.75. And the exact link is also in the description as well. So again, thank you kindly to our listeners for listening to another insightful conversation at CVAR. Until next time, be well, blessings, and God bless you all.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of CVAR, where vaccine injured share resources and hope without censorship. For more information about today's guest, please go to the show description. The views expressed are for information purposes, but do not replace any medical or legal advice. Please subscribe for more interviews. Blessings.